famed author Clive Cussler.
The hero, Dirk Pitt.
I can't believe he'd do it. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. There's no rhyme or reason for such a stupid decision. I'm Boss Gly, and I intend to kill you.
Night Probe, Episode 9, Jerk of All Trades.
So how have you been?
Good. I've been out of town all week.
Did you go anyplace fun or exciting?
We went to Vancouver. My wife had a government meeting. I had government stuff to go do.
Like super spy stuff. Just like Dirk.
But then...
Or his Canadian counterpart.
But then I took my youngest kid to the Cancer Bats and Guar on Wednesday.
What's a Cancer Bat?
Cancer Bats are a Canadian thrash metal punk band.
Oh, so it's not like your son doesn't have cancer and he's in a a baseball facility.
No.
Okay. Great. That's great news.
Yeah.
Your son doesn't have cancer.
Hooray. And the Cancer Bats are awesome. And Guar, do you know Guar at all?
I've heard of Guar, yes. That okay, would be the headliner, right?
So my kid was super happy to end the night completely drenched in orange fake blood.
That is certainly an age.
Which then made the ride on public transit to the other side of town very interesting at midnight. I ain't parking downtown. So that was fun.
If you hear Guar out of context, it sounds like some kind of resin.
I have to go buy it.
Like get the Guar in the sap and we'll...
New bottle of Guar.
Coat the arrowheads.
It's on the shelf right next to the clag.
Yeah. If I had to catch religion, I just caught it. And God's house is named Fogo de Chão. It is. The name is not important. It's the style of restaurant. It's Brazilian.
Oh.
So you have a little green light, red light marker.
Mm-hmm.
Green up means they bring you meat. Straight from a spit, so it's still like sizzling hot. And it's on skewers and they just cut you off.
I've seen these on TV where they bring the sword of meat to your table and just do shave
many
you off.
Many swords
some.
Of meat. It's oh, so wow. Fast. It's like getting shot in the face with meat.
Well, there's a soundbite I'm going to be saving.
I knew you would be. There's no time for like... When you go to a restaurant, it's paced a certain way that we're all relatively comfortable with. Maybe you get an appetizer, the waitress comes over, gives you drinks, and there's a certain speed to things. Not here. Fogo de Chão is the fastest fine dining restaurant experience ever. You go in, they're like, what do you want to drink? It is at your table in a nanosecond, and they say, food's coming.
Nice.
And you are done eating your great dinner in 12 minutes. You are then too full to move.
I am jealous. I need that restaurant.
It felt like a challenge. The guys kept coming over with the meat sword, like, you want some of this, you want some of this.
I can eat more meat.
Beef is like the top of the line. Like, I love steak. And I was getting hostile because I was feeling overwhelmed. And this guy would come over and he's like, bacon wrapped chicken. I'm like, get away, beef. Get away from me with your chicken. Your garbage chicken, yard birds.
But it's bacon wrapped.
You know, meat's terrible.
Well, the bacon just helps moisturize bad meat, but even so.
Yes, because bacon's never bad. But still, yeah. Give me the beef. Put your chicken sword down, man.
Speaking of sound clips, I've started editing some of our funniest lines out while I'm actually editing the episodes. And this made my night last night.
If the girl has to die, she has to be a slut. You know, shoot, it's evergreen.
I learned that from the 80s movies.
Oh, and spring is here. I know In your neck of the woods, it's probably still a little chilly.
It was -6 this morning, but it's warming up again. We go through a few false springs every year.
What do all Canadians do together?
They talk about the weather.
Oh, we get not a false spring, a very determinate spring when the coyotes come back and next door starts illuminating us on to how many small pets are missing.
Oh, wonderful.
Have you seen my Jack Russell? Have you seen my Logan?
For us, that's year-round because we have foxes all winter.
I once saw a fox chasing a rabbit, and a deer was being in the mix somewhere, too. And they were just, like, all running across the road. I was like, what? I'm not invited to that club.
I've seen a bear run across the road, and there's a deer in the ditch just watching, like, oh, bear.
Deer are great at not taking things seriously. They're always going to take a minute and stop and reflect.
I'm just going to stand in the road. I haven't hit... Well, that's not true. I did hit a deer, a very large one. God, it's got to be like 15 or 16 years ago, with my Chrysler 300, and it just like smashed in the front, caved in the hood. The head hit the window on my side, so the head just like whipped around and like for a split second, I'm staring at it, then boom, it's off and it's over. And by the time I stop and get out, the deer's just like running away, just like, fuck you.
Oh.
You can't hurt me. And like, my car's, the engine was fine. Ah. It was a lot. Oh, hello, dog. I'm talking about deer.
Yeah, you're fine.
I was on my way to a wedding, and that was a half hour from the destination. Surprise.
Did you get to the wedding?
Oh, yeah.
You weren't like covered in blood or...
No. We were all fine in the car. The outside of the car, all the plastic stuff was destroyed. The car still ran fine.
Well, sometimes like when you hit a big animal...
And I had a great story.
Sorry about the dogs. Sometimes when you hit a big animal, and I've hit a beaver... I've hit a beaver, in case you want to isolate. Motherfucking dogs.
Need a squirt bottle.
Sometimes it's a bit gnarly getting whatever it is that you hit off the grill, and it can ruin your clothes. I'm going to go deal with this. 1 second.
Okay. Time to punt the dog.
And looky, look what we got here. Small dog. Boom! That's the first thing to do.
Take that, dog. So, more on topic. I had two things written down, either for the intro or after the intro or whatever. They are related to the show, so maybe we should do the intro first.
Shall I?
Yes.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Cussler Hustlers, the only Clive Cussler podcast ever. I'm your co-host, Nancy. Over there is co-host Topper.
Hi, everybody. So, while editing last week's episode, you suggested that if we rebrand, you like the name The Pit Stop.
Yes.
Which is really good, but it's very specific to Dirk Pitt, but it's really good. But it occurs to me, starting next week, once we're done this book, and we have our filler episodes where we get to have some fun and relax and not read Dirk for a while, that would be the perfect name for those episodes.
Oh, okay.
So we can have, like, Pit Stop Number One.
That's brilliant.
Because we've stopped the pit.
Yes. Something has to.
And post-rebrand, you had a few ideas for a title. The Hero is an Asshole was great, but might not get past the censors. But you also had Why Do We Need a Hero? And I think that's, like, there's definitely something there. I like the idea of analyzing why we have the pop culture heroes that we do. Why do you need a hero?
In the podcast, this fucking guy.
Once again, not getting past the censors.
I know, we'd have to get creative. Thank you for taking my idea serious.
Oh yeah. Well, as I also said last week, the name of the podcast was your idea.
Well, eventually.
Once it rolled around for a few days, and I went, "Damn, it's better than mine." Don't be sorry. Stop it. I'm Canadian. I'm sorry. And then, oh yeah, we definitely haven't done 76.
All right. It was such a long episode last time. We were just calling no mas.
Kind
make
of.
It stop. Make the Dirk Pit stop.
Well, we're going to this episode. We have to get to the end.
We will get through the end.
Yeah.
We will drag listeners, the country of New Zealand, the continent of Australia, we will drag you through this.
There is a surprising amount of this finale that we can blah, blah, blah over. Because there's a lot of huge sections where Clive writes what's happening, but you can also sum it up in one sentence.
Yeah. At the beginning of the chapter, the Prime Minister is talking to his light and jean wife.
Mm-hmm. With a lot of fancy description for her, because I had to write down, there's Danielle in a backless black chiffon dress with fancy hair, fancy jewelry, fancy makeup, and at a fancy dinner.
That's too fancy for me. That's like three too many fancies.
With Sarvo, of all people.
Who has a fancy last name?
That's what I wasn't expecting, that she was like all this fancy for her husband.
Yes, but we learned that she's... just there for the moment. She's going on a shopping trip, quotes.
Yeah, she has to fly to Quebec to get her fall fashions.
To meet her boyfriend that she has a very complicated emotional relationship.
Yeah.
At least it's a one-sided complicated emotional relationship. He has no idea what's going on. But right now her husband is begging her, please don't go. And there's like a bittersweetness and a longing to his pleas.
Sarvo definitely knows what's going on now, because Valon came clean last episode, and the cops said, oh, we've known for a couple of years.
Yes, now we all know.
Now Sarvo knows everything.
He's the last to know. So Danielle skips town. I imagine she's still in a chiffon and heels.
Well, yeah.
And she goes to her secret townhouse, which has a secret tunnel. Which, where do you get the permits for that?
It's a bunch of libertarians in Canada.
Henry Vallon's on the other side of the secret tunnel, but she goes to this place because it's a townhouse that's owned by a friend that never comes to the country.
It is.
Which is very convenient. And I understand there's a certain class of people that have friends like that. I heard about a billionaire buying the top floor of an apartment building in New York City. He couldn't get the last apartment. So he called up a friend. He was like, sure, I'll buy that one. I'll never go there. But it's done.
You billionaires.
They're crazy. Just like these kids here. And Danielle's meeting up with her very complicated boyfriend, Henry Vallon, in a very complicated way.
Yeah, and he is like almost instantly a dick to her. He's like, what do you want? I'm busy. But this time, she finally has information for him.
Yes. This time it's really Henry being a dick to her.
Yes. Actual Henry, not fake Henry. There's too many Henrys. Sorry. All of me.
Yes, Henry Villain for the plebs.
Henry Villain.
She reports to Henri that Charles will resign as PM and run for leader of Quebec. Mm-hmm. This is stunning news.
This blows his mind because Vallon thought he was running unopposed.
And he needs to run unopposed. Seemingly, he doesn't have the charisma to take office without coming in on a wave of a huge event.
So they get in the car, they drive, they take the ferry. And while they're stuck on the ferry with the cars in front of them and the cars behind them, so they have nowhere to go, Henry Vallon gets in the car with a .44 Magnum.
But he's already in the car. How did that
happen? How is this happening? It's Gly.
Yes, and he's there to monologue your ass off.
He monologues his ass off, but then he escalates in a way I didn't think he would. He cracks Danielle across the face with the gun and draws blood and says he's going to kill them both.
She did have it coming. She was unfaithful to her husband, so you can do the bad things.
Narratively, I think they all have it coming, but this, I don't know. I'm not sure what I thought of Gly doing all this. I mean, we find out at the end of the next chapter exactly why, but still.
Also, he doesn't have to be, he could just be false Gly. He doesn't have to be in makeup to hijack the real guy.
I think it was funnier this way.
It is funnier, but it's so much more work.
Because this is the first time real Vallon is face-to-face with fake Vallon.
I just don't think people put this kind of energy into established relationships. Like, when you're trying to get the job is when you put forth this much effort. He's already got the bad guy henchman job. Who is he impressing now?
He is an overachieving henchman, and I love that for him.
He overachieving henchman is the title.
That might definitely be a special episode. On Kill James Bond, they have an award called the Kronstein Rosette for the henchman that goes above and beyond the call of duty.
Oh, that's adorable. That sounds like a badge of honor. I'm writing down overachieving.
I do like overachieving henchmen.
You should. You came up with it.
But now it's chapter 77. Foss has a gun. He's giving orders. Blah, blah, blah. I thought you crashed into a Japanese container ship. He's like, no, they didn't find my body. I got out 5 miles before.
And he explains how he did every part of that. Yes, I
every part of it.
Put this thing down. I battened that down. It was at this speed. Nobody cares.
He also says that soon he'll be the president of Quebec. And to prove it, he talks about how he sat at Vallon's desk. He's been in meetings with Vallon's colleagues. He's appeared in Parliament. And he's made love to Vallon's wife and mistress.
And Vallon's like, my wife?
That's where he draws the line.
What seems like bad form. Your mistress is right there. I don't know the etiquette. Like, I know when you're dating, you don't bring up the dates that you're going on with other people. That would be rude for the singles or the people dating in the world.
This has real don't touch my stuff vibes.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, you can appear in Parliament.
It's going to make Danielle feel weird.
But don't touch my wife. How dare you touch someone's wife, he says, while sitting next to someone's wife that he's sleeping with.
Yes, this is a complicated, awkward scenario. I'd be begging for the bullet. Just put an end to it. What do I say? Are we still dating after this? There's too much interpersonal relationship work that has to be done for an affair.
I love how all the books like this that are for men and appeal to men and idealize men and are male power fantasies make most of us look so shitty.
There is one thing that comes out looking good in this. Because Foss Gly gets to their car and he takes over the driver's side by pushing Vallon further in the car.
Mm-hmm.
You know why he can do that? Bench seating.
I miss bench seats.
I miss bench seating so much.
My first car was an 81 Malibu. It was like a couch.
Yes, I had the 84 Chevy Celebrity.
Sweet.
No radio. An AM radio, kind of. No defrost, which was interesting. Roll down windows.
I do miss those too. With the crank that goes round and round.
Yes.
People who own Teslas wish they had that now.
Oh, that is brutal. And now you have to cite why that is a very biting, kind of mean joke. Not mean. Billionaire's dead. Nobody should it here.
It wasn't specifically aimed at the billionaire who rolled her Tesla into a lake and then had no way to get out.
Yes, apparently the unbreakable glass is a problem at some point.
Yes.
Maybe a mob of angry monkeys is going to attack your car. Maybe you'll have to get out of your car someday. Perhaps they've written the book on this, or the pluses and the minuses, column A, column B. They've worked this out, but Tesla's going to come along and make things indestructible. You become the toaster in the bathtub.
Then that means that they will find you at the end of a Dirk Pitt novel at the bottom of a lake.
Oh, do you think she drowned, or?
I would assume drowned. There's not like a whole lot of voltage. Well, maybe there's a lot of batteries. Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to know.
Okay. I think we should take all the billionaires and so I'm not going to send flowers to this lady's funeral.
You would have voted for Pinochet.
He had ideas.
But from the left, yeah. I know.
Yeah, I'll speed run my cancellation on the internet.
Fake Valon and real Valon get into a scuffle, and he shoots real Valon, and then he drives the car into a excavated pit on a roadside construction site.
Valon's not dead.
No.
He's just shot in the collarbone.
He's shot in the collarbone, and Danielle's terrified.
Righteously so.
The cool part is, this whole scene recreates the Stephen King short story Dolan's Cadillac, which wouldn't be released for 4 more years. So Clive did this first.
Dolan's Cadillac?
Dolan's Cadillac.
That's a deep cut.
Yep. It's a great short story. It's been made into a few short films.
All right. The only people I know who have Cadillacs are named Antonio or Nunzio. Or Frank. A Dolan? Sounds so Gentile.
He is still a mafia guy.
Oh. Okay.
Yes.
Good. Keeping with the Cadillacs.
Yes. And this chapter ends with Foss Gly covering the car in dirt.
Yes, he's driven the car into a pre-dug hole. Grave. A car grave.
It's a car grave. And he fills in the trench, and Sarvo appears and looks down at Danielle through the windshield, and she mouths the words, "Forgive me," as the car is covered.
Yes, a real white squall moment.
And then they can't hear their screams anymore, and Sarvo and Gly walk away. And that might have been the coolest and most shocking thing that's happened in this book so far.
It's real badass of Sarvo.
It kind of is.
You're...
Might be a little bit too far.
He's a good man who has to do a bad thing, and mm-hmm. he's tortured about it, and he loves his wife, but she was a slut, so she has got to die.
It just seems overly, not macho, not masculine.
Maudlin?
Overly something to like, well, my wife cheated on me, I have to murder her. Like there's
most of the time that is an overreach, that thought. Listeners, if that statement goes through your head, go do something else. Go get drunk. go punch a wall.
Talk to a therapist.
That or a friend. Just dial numbers randomly until you reach somebody.
Ask for a divorce, maybe.
That too.
But no.
No, the murdering, last step. That's last step.
It works in Dolan's Cadillac because it's a regular guy who kills a mob boss. This is the reverse. This is the leader of Canada murdering his wife and his major political opposition with the help of an American mercenary psychopath serial killer.
And he's there on scene.
Mm-hmm.
Does he want the CIA just to have a dossier the size of the Lincoln Towers? There's going to be photos of him. Did he throw some dirt onto the car too, like it was a ritual burial? How twisted is this guy getting? We don't know. It doesn't seem like a canny response to your wife cheating on you is to be there for the murder. He already hired somebody else to do it.
Mm-hmm. And chapter 78 is really long and convoluted and involved, but it can be summed up with Sarvo kills Gly.
He does.
I don't know. I don't know how much deeper in this you want to get.
Gly does his job. He's going to go get paid. He's going to get paid money that's been very used.
Mm-hmm.
Or Canadian money that's been in circulation, has been very circulated. Gly's impressed.
$30 million in Canadian, which he examines with a jeweler's loop.
Yes.
He's real careful.
And he has some guy search the plane because that's also part of his loot. Eddie Vallon's old plane. He won't be using it. And the captain he's hired is checking the plane. He's got one of those guys. You can get them on Craigslist or sometimes you know them. They can fix your sink. They can hide a body. You know, a guy.
Handyman.
So he's got a pilot version of that who's sweeping the plane for bombs, listening devices, all types of sabotage, and he could fly a plane. This is a jerk of all trades.
It helps if you're a psychopathic American mercenary serial killer to have these friends.
It really, there must be a network. This is pre-internet, too. So they were doing the emotional labor to go and reach out.
Foskly tells Sarvo, "You stink," which seems to be like the major insult for this book.
Yes, you poo-poo head.
When there's nowhere else to go, you stink.
Yes, and Commissioner Finn, Harry Finn, and Sarvo see him off. And the Prime Minister just goes to Finn and he's like, "So how are you doing it?" And it's autopilot. It's on stuck. Oh, it's been Boeinged. The autopilot has been Boeinged.
The airplane is only rated for 30,000 feet, but the autopilot is set to just keep climbing.
And it's not going to tell the pilot, which is what I mean by it's been Boeinged. It's going to do an autopilot thing and not tell the pilot.
And they've deactivated the emergency oxygen. So it's like, yeah, they'll get up high, they'll pass out, it'll crash somewhere. And they already have the press release.
There's the instruments will never read that they're achieving that altitude. And the autopilot cannot be disabled under any circumstances until it hits the ground. I presume it stopped working then.
Yep. And the end of the chapter is the press release that Henri Vallon and Danielle Sarvo crashed just north of French Guiana after flying higher than it was supposed to. The great nation of Canada will mourn these two great people. The end.
And that's why a press release is better than a press conference. Because I'd have questions.
We will not be taking any questions at this time.
No, no fucking questions. Why was she... No, she was dressed up. What was going on between those two? She was dressed up to get messed up. Why was Henry in the plane? Why was... No question.
He's in mourning. He's not going to answer questions about his wife. Although you'd think somebody in the press would have some serious questions about why the only two candidates for the leader of the new Free Quebec have just died under mysterious circumstances.
Sure, this is back when we had a working press that was funded.
And that shit just didn't happen in Canada.
But now we're on to chapter 79, the Hudson Valley, cloak and dagger weather. Deep fog rolled in, and Shaw and Dirk Pitt are in the woods playing cat and mouse.
Yep, Shaw rolls up in a motorhome with a bunch of, well, I guess the Marines aren't here, but he rolls up with all of his crew, and they're on the mountain where they think the train is. And they found another entrance to the mine since the main entrance to the mine has been completely caved in.
Yes. And Dirk is staring off into space as he does, longing for whiskey.
Oh, he's very low on sleep.
They've clear his head.
They've established how low on sleep he is like 8 times in this chapter.
And he's like, well, I only had whiskey to clear my head.
It ain't. Alcohol is chemical energy.
There was a scene in, oh, what was a show on Apple TV with the soccer? Right. That's all. Drink alcohol. That's either make a lot of good decisions or some very, very bad ones.
Crap. It's the guy's name, right? I never saw that show.
It was delightful and it doesn't age well, so I wouldn't go back and watch it.
Ted Lasso?
That's the one.
It was the guy's name. That's all I knew.
The female lead, the tall blonde lady, she is gorgeous.
Now I have to look up who that is. Ted Lasso. Hannah Waddingham?
Yes.
I don't know if I know who that is.
I would ruin my life.
Oh, she was in Les Mis. I like her already. And she was Septa Una. Oh, that's the lady who rings the bell in Game of Thrones and goes,
yes.
Shame.
Okay. She's not really...
She's in lots of things.
You don't really see her.
Yeah.
She's wearing a cloak with a hood.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, yeah, there is a weird mixture of hot and evil with her.
I don't want to examine that any further. As Pitt's longing for whiskey... His team is gonna like dive in. They found this railroad spur on an old farm in previous to today's event. Some teens skinny dipped over there and a few of them drowned, or there was some scuba diving accident.
Yeah.
And the owner of the farm was like, no more. Nobody can touch this place, which is why it's very undisturbed.
Yeah. But the entrance to the cave has been barred off. Like they cemented in some bars, although they get those bars out pretty quick.
Cemented in, bulldozed over, every possible access point is under miles of rubble.
Yeah. On the other side of the mountain, one of the Brits fell into a ventilator shaft. So that's how they found their way in, and they're working on getting that dug out. And then at the end, the APC full of Marines arrives and reports to Sandecker, who's happy that, like, Marines are treating him with respect, because Dirk never does.
That's what you took away from it? Aw.
And we finally get the title of the goddamn book when somebody says, okay, let's make a night probe. A night probe? A night probe. A term for dark underwater cave exploration.
That cannot be a term for that.
Night probe.
I don't care what reality says. That is not a term anybody uses.
It was a real stretch to wait till page 400 to get to night probe.
Yes, and then Dirk dives deep. He's going in.
Dirk dives deep with his dive buddy Riley, and Dirk surfaces in a little air pocket that has lots and lots of stalactites. And Riley surfaces a little bit too hard and impales his face on the stalactites.
Oh, which I would so do. I would forget about stalactites.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be in the cave and be like, that's where they live. God damn it. I should have seen this coming. Now I can't see anything. I really empathize with Riley.
Yeah, and it's a very horrible piece of geology is stalactites will form above water and then build up and extend all the way down to the surface of the water. But then, you know, they can't possibly go lower than that because they wouldn't be in the water for the minerals to be deposited. So that's horrifying.
It really is.
You could look up at an air bubble and go, yay, an air bubble. And a millimeter above the water is stalactites at a point.
That's a new fear unlocked. I don't like this at all. Cave scuba diving. Oof. Not for the faint of heart or for the smart, because I've heard a bunch of podcasts this week about people cave scuba diving, and it's a risky hobby.
I was just about to ask, have you ever heard of a podcast called The Magnus Archives?
No. Is that about cave diving disasters?
Sort of.
Because that's a niche.
It's a horror podcast, although it does have, like, each season has its own storyline, but there is also one huge overarching storyline for 200 episodes. And it's about this place called the Magnus Institute, which is tracking down evidence of the fears, which are like the sentient manifestations of fear. And one of the 16, one of the ones that is very upsetting for me in particular, is the darkness. And most of those stories deal with people who are in caves and get sealed up in the caves or buried alive. And it is an amazing podcast.
Buried alive is just the imagery for that. Ooh.
It's funny, it's dark, it's got romance, it's got great voice acting, it's got action, it's got weird monsters, but just a few of the episodes I really don't want to re-listen to.
There was Ryan Reynolds, of my Ryan Reynolds movie, where it opens and he's buried in a coffin and he flicks his lighter or cell phone, I don't remember which, and he realizes he's buried. I don't know if you know what limited storytelling is, but for our listeners, limited storytelling is when a story takes place either mostly or entirely in one location, like Reservoir Dogs, Frozen, the first one before the cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
They're on a ski.
Yeah, ski lift.
Ski lift.
With wolves underneath them.
Anyway, Shaw's team is fighting with Dirk's team.
Yeah.
Lots of gunfire going off. I'll get back to that memory I dropped. I realize, with my memory issues, I have to stop what I'm focusing on and go around in a circle, and it'll come back.
I'm like that.
So Shaw's team is fighting with Dirk's team.
Yeah, and each side is saying, well, the other side's really good, which makes sense, because it's 3rd Marines Force Recon and the SAS. So it's like the best of the best are all shooting the crap out of each other.
And they're half a mile apart. There's so much lead being traded here.
We meet a bunch of new characters, and then they all die. Yeah, they're on just like a random mountain in upstate New York in the dark.
Yes, in the dark.
And this chapter ends with Pitt dying.
He nearly suffocates.
I know. He's almost out of air, as always. He's in a pitch dark cave. He comes to a fork in the tunnel. He goes left and finds the dead divers. He's like, oh, shit. So he backtracks and goes right, runs out of air, drops the air tanks. The hypothermia is kicking in. And he's suddenly very calm, and his night probe is ended, and then the chapter ends.
Yes, he loses his peripheral vision, his vision tunnels,
mm-hmm. He
achieves some kind of inner peace and acceptance, and he's surrendering to the void.
He can only sleep when he's knocked out or
drowned.
Or drowned.
And I learned a new word. I don't know how your guide pronounced it in the audiobook. Stygian?
Oh, Stygian.
Stygian. Oh, it means very dark.
Yes.
Banta dark.
Stygian relates to one of the layers of hell, I think.
And then...
if you play Dungeons and Dragons, you know the word Stygian.
Oh.
It gets used a lot. Now, do you have a chapter 81? Because mine skips right to 82 now.
Oh, I have a chapter 81. There's a lot of injured Americans. Heidi is hopping around like a one-legged Florence Nightingale. She's in the cast from the previous Broken Leg. Al says Pitt's not the kind of guy who dies.
In mine, that was back in chapter 80. So I think mine just merged 80 and 81.
And I see that Al, everyone's that kind of person until they die.
Yeah, but Dirk really wants to live. And if you want it hard enough, you'll get it.
Yes, not like that guy in Pompeii who was clearly having the time of his life when he was struck by lightning, struck by the lava.
If that's the picture I'm thinking, you're thinking of.
Yes, it is. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. You're all dirty people with dirty minds. In chapter 82, let me sum up, if I may.
Absolutely.
Shaw to his guy digging. We're running out of time. Can we blow it up? Caldwaller is the digging guy. He goes, no, it'll cave in. It won't work at all. Shaw's like, we're out of time. Make it go boom. Caldwell, okay.
Yeah, because the Brits are down to like two guys now, and they're organizing their surrender. So Shaw's like, this is it.
Yes, and they're just biding for time to get Shaw in there, and the surrender is supposed to be a little bit more drawn out. Every minute they give him is more time for success.
One of the Americans says, nobody fights this hard but fanatical terrorists.
Or mercenaries, we find out. You could really go on Groupon and get a value.
Yeah. Get your Fosglai today.
But Shaw gets down there. The big boom does work. He gets in there. So Dirk dives in. This guy just walks in. Well, he drops in. 12 feet short of the ground. So he has to jump and break his wrist.
He breaks his arm.
I'd figure he'd know how to roll. You don't drop like and just try and stay on your feet. You roll.
Yeah. But it is also a cave, and there's minecart rails and regular train rails everywhere. So maybe he rolled left and he should have gone right.
Possibly. In the book, it said he was trying to absorb it, the impact in his knees, and land up straight. Which for a 60-year-old James Bond is a lot of pressure on the knees.
Superhero landing.
I'd rather have the broken wrist than have two knees explode.
But he finds the Manhattan Limited and a shitload of mummified corpses. A shitload of mummified corpses and all the gold.
Yes, he's quite, what is this? Oh, it's oddly heavy. Rub some dust off of it. And he's like, oh my God, there's so much gold.
He figures $300 million in today's money, which I think is about right.
And he's only briefly preoccupied by this. He doesn't lose focus. He makes a mental note of it. Fuck ton of gold here. Wow.
He's got shit to do.
Meanwhile, topside, people are still shooting at each other, and we meet Sergeant Sanchez, and him and his crew are fighting the tyrannical terrorists. They don't know about the Groupon yet. The bullets stop for a bit. He looks smug, and he's in what they take to be military surplus as an outfit.
Yeah. You're wearing face makeup, black face makeup? Only amateurs do that. What weird gear you have. I'm guessing it's because the SAS basically had to smuggle themselves in.
And they probably looked so European. Maybe they were wearing berets.
Smoking those tiny, fancy cigarettes, drinking tea while shooting.
But I'm a little tired. Well, have a nap. Then fire the missiles!
But Sergeant Bentley is not dressed in army surplus. He is part of his Queen's Army, and he's very tactful, and he conveys the message of surrender very well and smiles. Sanchez is confused, but he goes along with him, and he meets the other fighters, and he realizes it's the Royal Marines, and he's dumbfounded.
Yeah. But they're all very polite to each other.
Yes, this is where it becomes science fiction.
it all has the vibe of, you know, we're military men. You know how this goes. We shoot you, you shoot us, blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's so they'd still be shooting.
That's how it works. You get it. But now we're done. It's fine. We surrender. Cheerio.
And this guy...
good fight, old chap.
...was in Hudson Valley. Sanchez is cold and damp, and he sees this guy coming out of the fog. He would have had a bullet in his head, because I believe in Sergeant Sanchez. This Bentley guy would not have known what hit him. Much like that Bentley on the Rainbow Bridge when the guy had a heart attack.
And he exploded. The chapter ends with back down in the mine under the mountain on the train. Shaw hears a noise and turns around and sees a corpse reading a newspaper. And the corpse lowers the newspaper and smiles and tells Shaw that he won't find the treaty in that leather case.
And this scares Shaw down to his core, down to his toes.
Because Dirk has put on
a dead man's hat.
The hat and coat.
Again, what does this place smell like?
This is an amazingly Dirk moment, by the way.
So he got with enough time for a costume change.
Yep.
He didn't take anything off. He still has his scuba suit on, but he adds to it with flair.
Mm-hmm. And I did have to write down that all the visuals in this scene are great. I think this is the scene that Clive was working towards for the entire book, because it's great descriptions. Pitt and Shaw are being friendly but still antagonistic. Pitt stole a gun off one of the corpses, which is bold. You can't imagine it still works.
That is bold. Sometimes you just need to brandish a weapon.
Yeah.
Which for anyone outside of the United States means to have a gun and show it off. That's a noun you don't need outside of this continent.
And now, for all the readers, they recap how the heist went. Massey and his team diverted the train into this mine shaft. They set up some explosives to block the mine shaft so they could take their time. They didn't count on one that caused other cave-ins and flooded the escape route, meaning there was absolutely no way out of this cave for anyone forever. And two, they didn't count on one of the train cars having a dozen American Marines guarding a treaty.
Yes.
It was a horrible gunfight, and everybody who's involved in this dies, and now it's Massey and Essex. Well, we're trapped. Yeah.
And they find the corpses of Massey and Essex in the Pullman car, surrounded by luxury and decayed, both sitting at the table.
Yep. I don't remember if it was Massey or Essex, but one of them wrote a letter to his wife.
Massey. And he monologues in the letter, describes all of the events that you just...
Ah, yes.
And then they all starve to death slowly.
Yes. But Pitt has already found the treaty and he won't hand it over.
Shaw really wants it, though.
I know, he really will. Like, Shaw has done a lot more than Dirk in this book so far. Shaw has been everywhere. Shaw has done everything. And he's so close to his goal.
I do love that Shaw reacts to Pitt cracking a joke at the beginning of this chapter with, I just don't have time for this nonsense. I'm not doing any emotional work for you. I'm not laughing at your jokes. Just out with it, man. Let's finish this. He's there for work. Pitt's there to dress up and crack jokes.
Yeah, because he knows he's already won. So Pitt is just at maximum cockiness. Also possibly a name for a show.
Maximum cockiness?
Nah, that sucks.
Talk about an issue with the censor. Think of the graphics.
It's a regular word. I don't know what their problem is.
But Al has been so worried. As things draw to a climactic ending, Pitt and Shaw have their guns pointed at each other. Only Shaw doesn't know that because Pitt's got a newspaper obfuscating his gun, which, like you said, is an antique, that he's firing from his lap upwards in an expert angle to just graze Shaw's head. And he meant to do that.
I meant to do that.
That is some tough shooting.
That is the hand shot first technique where you're like, you're lounging at a table. You just got your hand on your hip, but you got the gun down there aimed up at him.
Yes. Sometimes they call it the Plaxico and you shoot yourself in the leg.
Well, that happens too.
Plaxico Burress was an amazing athlete and a New York Giant who had his gun in his sweatpants in a New York City nightclub and yada yada.
This has been your New York Minute.
So then Al comes bursting in right after Dirk shoots this guy in the head, like he meant to, just like a little...
Winged him on the head, yeah.
It was a crease, which I think a crease in your skull is very serious sounding.
I think that happens once in each book. Someone gets winged on the head and they're just unconscious.
And there's never a toll for the brain damage.
Nope.
Oh, and this brings us to chapter 84. Shaw's been dealt with. Pitt has the document. So he hijacks a VTOL.
Yeah, he hijacks it and he holds a gun to the guy's head and tells him to land on the lawn of Parliament because they don't have enough time.
Yes, this is wild.
Because now Pitt, who is wearing scuba suit bottoms and a dead man's coat because he hasn't had time to change, runs into Parliament with a gun and an undisclosed satchel until he's stopped by a Mountie who politely asks him to stop.
just the landing alone.
Oh, I know. There's so much happening here.
They would have evacuated the building.
This insane hobo with a 44 Magnum runs into Parliament.
Oh, yeah, that's a big gun. They would notice. But Pitt gets to the president just in time.
Yeah, he says the magic words to the Secret Service, which is, "But I know Mercier." And they're like, "Oh, okay, come on."
No, he knows Moon.
Was it Moon? Oh, okay.
It was Moon, because Moon...
I know Moon, and they're like, "Oh, okay."
It's finally useful now.
Moon is the magic word.
And who else would know Charles James Shaw Moon III, whatever his prissy name was? So the press gets the document. It interrupts his speech briefly, but he comes back and he's like, "And with this document, yada, 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 United States of Canada."
Yep.
Everyone cheers.
He proves that it's part of America. Mercier, well, it's part of America, with Mercier acknowledging that the president never says Canada belongs to America, which would definitely be the wrong word to use. All the language he uses is, "We are merged, we are joined, we are mighty together as the United States of Canada," which is the stupidest possible name.
The name, I kind of like United States of Canada. It starts with the United States, so people would buy that. And then of Canada kind of peters off. So I know a lot of people personally that wouldn't get to the end of the title, so they'd be fine with it. We have no attention span as a country.
Mm-hmm. But during this speech, in a true Pitt moment, Pitt falls asleep.
Yes. And everyone laughs to themselves. Aw, Pitt.
That's our Pitt.
Meanwhile, how would this speech go without briefing anyone before you're dropping the idea of, "Oh yeah, we own you guys"? This is a declaration of war, but said nicely, so it worked? No.
Well, they talk about how some of the politicians, I'm guessing the ones they bought off, are into it. Some of them are concerned, but Mercier thinks that they can be swayed. And of course, we have the treaty. We can't go back on the treaty.
As every indigenous person in this continent knows, you can't go back on a treaty.
Yeah.
I'm just sorry.
But now we get to chapter 85, which might be the first one of these chapters where I yelled at the book.
Ah, yes. It's been a big master plan this whole time.
Yeah. Sarvo is on a plane with the president. They pour them some Seagrams, and then they just like straight up turn to the camera and say, "If anyone ever found out how we worked together all these years to create a single nation, we'd all be shot for treason. Strange how a fresh senator and a young member of parliament meeting at a hunting lodge could change history." Like, they've been doing this for, like, what, 10, 20, 30 years?
Yeah, speak louder for the microphones in the back. And in my book, not the audiobook, they were drinking in the back of a limo, not a plane. So that's a nice difference.
Oh.
I like
oh,
okay. When they switch it up a little bit.
At some point, they might have gone from the plane to the limo.
So it was, these two are masterminds.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time.
It's only stuff that's happened in the last few months that made this work, because they talk about all the power from James Bay. They talk about all the oil the doodlebug found and how they, you know, now that they're one country, they have all the power and all the oil.
Yes, because that would go over well, you know, what we just talked about with the merging. No problems.
I guess the James Bay hydro plant, if this all was a plan from Sarvo and the unnamed president for all these years, the James Bay power plant was part of their merger.
But they didn't know about the oil reserve.
They didn't know about the oil reserve. That's a bonus.
Oh, okay. So
you got to have bonus oil.
You do have to have bonus.
And then just at the very end, the president's like, "Ah, yeah, sorry that you had to torture and kill your wife." And Sarvo's like, "Yeah, that was rough." And they just move on.
Well, are you going to beat a dead horse?
I assume the American president has, if not done that specifically, done something worse or equivalent.
Let's not bring current events into the into this.
I wasn't.
I know you weren't.
I just meant, like, in general.
Think of any president in my lifetime that probably isn't guilty of all of the things.
The grand concept of the American president. What with all the war crimes and everything.
You can't be a president without the war crimes. And chapter 86 is the most disturbing wrap them up we've got from Dirk Pitt's.
I did not expect this. There's been so much wackiness happening in these chapters, and I did not expect this.
We cut to Heidi. Sandecker is the only one who remembered she existed,
because mm-hmm.
Dirk had to run off with a document and hijack a helicopter. Al had to go after him longingly. Sandecker was the only one who was like, "You and the cast, you probably need a ride, and a shower, place to stay." and get back to your work. Because you're in the Navy, right? They're going to want you back.
Yes.
So she's at the airport in a cast, and Dirk surprises her with lots of flowers to carry.
Mm-hmm. A gigantic bouquet.
At the airport. Thank you, Dirk. You've thought this through. But she sees it as a loving gesture.
And then she apologizes for being bitchy.
She has no self-esteem.
I'm not sure she should be apologizing for anything she's done here.
She should have a PTSD response every time she sees Dirk Pitt.
She tells Dirk that you'll always be my dearest friend. And he's like, aw, only a friend? She's like, I think that's the best we can do, you know? And then there's a lot of description about how, like, you know, Dirk is a great lay, but Brian Shaw is my one true love.
She likes the older men.
Mm-hmm.
Love is love. Women, stay within 5 years. Otherwise, you're just signing up to be a nursemaid.
Yeah. Dirk says he has one last gift for her, and it's a magic trick.
Close your
eyes. And he tells her to close her eyes and count to 10.
No, never. Not closing. I'll pretend to close my eyes, Dirk. Just an Uzi's going to show up. Or somebody oozing. Both have happened.
Around Dirk, all the time.
But it's true magic act. He has dun-dun-dun Shaw right there.
Yes.
He's in handcuffs, but they're tastefully covered by an overcoat.
Yeah, Pitt arranged for one last visit.
And Heidi and Shaw confess their love for each other. Heidi's just going to light her career on fire. What was all the studying for in the first place if you're willing to do this for a man? You'll never have security clearance.
Yeah, he apologizes and says, well, I have to go off to jail forever.
And then Dirk's like, wait a minute, I've got a white guy special. Ba-ba-da, you're free. Here's a ticket for the plane. Hurry up, you might miss Heidi.
Yep. Shaw escapes his handcuffs and apologizes that, it doesn't usually take that long for him to escape handcuffs.
So he was just in them to be polite.
Yeah. He can't believe that Pitt would do this. And Pitt's like, oh, the president owes me a favor. Does he know what you're doing? Not yet.
But they won't be repercussions.
No, not at all.
This is just a...
Not for Dirk Pitt.
...super spy that could disappear at the drop of a hat. And I'm letting him go because I believe he loves a woman.
And finally, the end of this chapter, Dirk says, James Bond would have been proud of you. I heard you two were quite close. Brian Shaw says, he's a fictional character, and Pitt's just like, is he?
Yeah, right, buddy.
Thank you, Clive, for really dropping the anvil on the Brian Shaw.
Yes, the anvil, the hammer, whatever Acme has. They opened up and shoved it out the door.
One of the big round bombs. Dirk heroically drives off with his one true love, a classic car. Although I have to say, book five, we've gone through four books where he ends the book, either with the damsel for the book or heading back to the nymphomaniac that he left at the start of the book. With this one, he drives off.
Is he heading for a nymphomaniac?
No. In this one, he drives off single.
Oh, that's growth for him.
I didn't get the woman.
And he's okay with it.
Yes.
He facilitated a romance. He facilitated a felon fleeing, but he thinks he facilitated a romance.
And he destroyed Canada. Big day for him.
Shaw has double-crossed Heidi at every step of the way. Every time he's encountered her, he's done her dirty.
Yes, but he did that...
But now it's love.
For duty. He did that for king and country.
And he could escape for king and country as well. Think it through, Heidi. One more sentence, Heidi. You can do it.
Now that he doesn't work for them anymore, he's free to be in love with her.
Yes, they let you just walk away. That's what the TV and movies tell us. Just walk away.
He's no longer a world famous secret agent.
No, he's just a vessel for the secrets that they have out in the open. They're totally fine.
He's only a guy who has a farm somewhere in Wales that is not good. Actually, no, because when he was hired for this, Sims said, when you're done this mission, your farm will be 40 acres larger. He failed the mission. So now I wonder if the Brits are going to try and have him killed now, because he seems to have been turned by the Americans.
He does seem to have been fully turned. I don't know how he's going to spin it. The pay negotiations are really up in the air. Do you still get the 48 extra 40 acres? You get 20 because you did half the job?
If I was him, I wouldn't go to that farm because there's going to be a sniper near there.
Do they know he's been turned if he's free?
Well, I have to imagine that they know he was captured by the Americans.
Oh, and they don't have the treaty, and they lost all of Canada, and that guy's wife slept with another dude. So it's just been a very traumatic day for Canada. This book was a dud.
There was so much happening The climax was just a 5-minute conversation in a train under a mountain.
Yeah, and when you really think about all those people starving to death in that tunnel, it kind of strangles any fun out of the book.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of a chapter where Shaw describes seeing a mother holding two small children, all dead.
Yeah.
Already.
And all the kids who died on the Empress of Ireland when that sank.
Oh, that was like all children.
Yeah.
It was like infants were the crew.
Well, back in the old days, you know.
you're five, you have a master's degree.
You're 11 years old, get a job.
11 years old, quit smoking, you're old enough.
You're 11 years old, why haven't you married and settled down?
Yep, not going to one up you. I do remember being 11 and being told my options as a little girl. You can get married, you could be a spinster, which you don't want to be, a nun or a teacher. So at 11...
Make good choices, kids.
And that is the end of Night Probe, which... cannot be a term. I'm doubling down, tripling down. Or they're all 14-year-old boys who laugh every time I say it if it is a term.
Night Probe, facts for kids.
Oh, no.
So,
no, you're going to be on a list.
No. This is a facts for kids website, and it has Night Probe on here. So, explanation of the novel's title claims Night Probe is an old diving term for exploring the darkness of underwater caves. And yeah, this is like a child's summary. For Night Probe.
Yes. Also, there's study guides for this book. Bafflingly.
That might be one of them. Wow.
I think I lied and promised to buy a study guide. I'm not doing that.
I think you did. I don't know if it's a real term, but I just hear people, I see webpages talking about how he claims it's a real term. So he very well may have just made it up for this book.
Well, like I said, when you're arrested, the police give you a phone call, not because it's a law, because it's been seen in media. Movies, mm-hmm. TV, comic books. So where does art begin and reality begin? They merge. Time is a flat circle.
But now that that's the end of book 5, we are in a stage right now just because of I'm out of town a lot, so...
Yes, I'll be out of town next week, taking my family to the safest place in the world, Washington, D.C.
Hooray! See if you can find where it was bombed by the USS Iowa.
Oh, okay. We're meeting a congressperson, so I'll be sure to bring that up. They're not going to be touchy about subject of bombs or incendiary devices or anything at the Capitol.
Not in Washington, no.
The cat has finally graced us. Now it's a podcat.
So many claws. Right now we're at a stage where episodes will be released every 2 weeks just because we're both out of town a lot. I can't do as much editing. And we're going to have a few bonus episodes in between this and the next book.
Yes, bonus episodes. We're going to take tangents and divert.
So I'm doing a bonus episode on the books of Mac Bolan. Do you have one? You have like a month before you have to actually record it with me.
Let me give it some thought so I don't give you a bad answer right off the bat.
Absolutely.
It might be a deep dive on something Columbo-esque.
Ooh, excellent.
But that's all I've got for now. We did it. We finished this book.
We did it.
It's only been years.
Once again, this is the only book we've ever done.
It's the only book ever written. What an odd cult we started.
And the next book we get into will be Pacific Vortex, which is the 6th book to be released, but the first book he wrote.
I started listening to it in audiobook.
Oh, dear.
Copy I've purchased, the hard copy, came to me, but entirely in French.
You have the worst luck with hard copies.
And if you go back to the description, it says nothing that, it says it's an English language book. They just sent me a French copy. But when I get to the audiobook, as I'm painting a room, and he says, oh yeah, this is my first book in the prologue, I deflated. I had to put down the household task I was doing. I was like, it's your first one? We're going back to your original skill set?
Yep.
This is the no growth hustler?
This one's weird, or it's going to be weird, because in book 2, there is mention of things that happened in book 1, including Pitt losing the love of his life.
Oh, so that becomes like a Timmy character.
Yep.
Yeah, that's wild. The love of his life. He gets a new one of those every 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I will leave you to go enjoy your Sunday.
Woo! All right. You have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye, listeners.
This has been Cussler Hustlers. Your hosts have been Topper and Nancy. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Cussler Hustlers.